So tonight is kind of an odd topic. The title I've given it is Walking Toward the Fire. And it's about the interaction of personal growth, Buddhism, with anti-racist work. It's inspired by a long quote, which I'll share in a few minutes, from Reshma Menakem, who is a someone who I've really come to admire. He's an activist. He's a somatic therapist. So his perspective is very much rooted in the body, in the body's own processes of healing. And I think I'll begin by saying, we think about questions of race in this country. Imagine 100 years ago. It was taken for granted, so many white people were explicitly racist, and it was agreed upon, it was socially acceptable. Jim Crow was in wide practice, all that. Then, of course, over the past 100 years, there was a lot of practice, a lot of progress. Of course, in the 60s, before 1960, you could actually have signs up, about, white bathroom, colored bathroom, that sort of thing. And so certainly in the 60s, they took the signs down, they straightened out some of the laws. And, at this point, many people's thinking has been profoundly changed. And it's actually, in the great scheme of great sweep of history, it actually has been a relatively quick change. From a historical perspective, it's not surprising at all that there's still a remnant of white people today who believe more or less the same things that white people believed 100 years ago. It actually is much more surprising that there are white people today who are so committed to doing anti-racist work, And so I think it's important to have that historical perspective about how fast everything has changed, and none of that negates the urgency of the work. It's really about having that a balance of sorts there. In many ways, and this is so human, it's not that it was necessarily easy to all those struggles in the 60s and passing all the laws and changing people's thoughts. There was a lot of good work that went into that, and it was a struggle at times, but there is a way that that was the easy part of the struggle. And the much harder part of the struggle, in some ways, is the part that dovetails with personal growth work. And so I can speak primarily from the point of view of someone coming from whiteness about personal growth work. One of the quotes that I really like from Reshma Menakem is that for white people, white privilege is not the shark. White privilege is the ocean. White supremacy is not the shark. White supremacy is the ocean. And, it's interesting. Last week we saw in the news some pictures of sharks. Some very powerful images of white supremacists, who people who say these explicitly inflammatory things, these explicitly racist things. And it's so easy for white people to look at that and say, "Oh, I'm not like that." But the truth is that it's not just about the shark, it's about the water, it's about the everyday hidden assumptions of my ordinary life. Insofar as those everyday hidden assumptions are grounded in white privilege, I am unawares wielding a weapon of hate as I walk through the world. And in many ways, the conversation about race, the conversation about white privilege, it's a difficult conversation, of course, and it runs parallel to another difficult conversation, the conversation about toxic shame. Toxic shame really plays out in all kinds of dynamics of comparison about, you know, someone driven by toxic shame will be looking to top others, put others down, you know, one up people, that sort of thing, you know, because shame is inherently the feeling that I am the lowest thing in the universe. And so if I top somebody else, at least in that moment, it feels like, all right, at least I'm not the lowest thing in the universe. I've put somebody below me, that kind of thing. But of course, it's very sad because when we engage in that kind of behavior, of course, the witnessing mind sees that, it sees the cruelty of it, and then that just causes more shame. And so then there's a feedback loop there. But certainly the dynamics of race and privilege hook into the shame dynamics because it's all about comparisons. It's all about, you know, I'm a little bit better than somebody else, or I have a little more privilege than somebody else because of my skin color. And addressing this, and really addressing addressing any of these deeply held assumptions, which as Raisa Menikin points out, are ultimately grounded deep in the body. It really requires transformative healing. And transformative healing is what moves, what has the power to move long-standing blocks and stuck places in our life. It has the power to disrupt all kinds of deeply held dysfunctional patterns. And it's certainly the case that I'm not gonna dismantle my own white privilege without engaging in transformative healing. One simple way to talk about transformative healing is to say very simply, it's about walking toward our deepest fear. It's about walking toward our deepest pain. Walking toward the place in us where we most don't want to go. And that, how can I say, that is a very quick verbal summary, and of course that is a much longer process. In process, if I start that journey, of course I can't zip right to the heart of my deepest pain because it would be too much. It would be intolerable, you know. And so it's about how do I move into it, breathe into it day by day, lean more into it each day, growing my container a little more, able to hold a little more. Able to hold a little more until I'm actually able to face it fully. And it's funny, in my experience, also facing one's deepest pain is not a one-time event in life. You know, in practice, what happens is I face one thing and then my container gets bigger and bigger. Okay, finally I can hold that and integrate it fully. Okay, now I'm done. Now I have a bigger container. Well, now because I have a bigger container, I can sense the next thing. All right, the deeper thing. All right. Now, and then the process is over. Now I have to lean into that, get bigger and bigger, you know, and each time the container gets bigger and bigger. Now, whether there's an end point to this process, I don't know. The Buddhists would talk about enlightenment, having a container so big that it holds the entire world. That is something I certainly cannot corroborate in the experience of my own life at the moment. But I want to share this quote. I found this a very powerful quote about this whole process. of walking toward the fire, walking toward this center place of pain. And so it's on the quote sheet, so let me share the quote sheet there. I'll read this long quote, but some people might find it helpful to read it because it's so long. When you're walking toward the fire, as I look it in the mind's eye, I see it like a burning sun. And as you walk to the sun, the closer you walk to the sun, the more you sweat, right? The more you begin to question, am I going in the right direction? This is getting awfully hot. The more you start to stink. The more you start to think about the things that you thought you had dealt with, the more boredom sets in, the more questioning, the more physical pain you start to experience, the more you walk toward the sun, the more that begins to happen simply because you take one step and then another step. And one of the things that actually happens is that you begin to learn what you thought your limitations were and what they actually are. And as you move closer to that thing, what happens is so that the heat starts to bring up these things. It starts to begin to force you to get stronger. It forces you to develop a language. It forces you to begin to develop what I call a more fortified mind. It forces you to thicken your skin. And it forces you at the same time to develop a fortified mind, and your skin begins to thicken, and it also forces you to balance that with a flexible heart. As you walk closer, the other thing it does is it burns away things like inadequacy. It burns in humbleness. It burns away self-doubt. The closer you get toward that sun, the more of yourself begins to be revealed, and that begins to burn away. And this is so important for white people as it relates to race, right? As it relates to race, the burning fire for white people is to walk toward race and toward creating a cultural container, both communally and individually, so more of their self can be burned away. And if we stop walking toward that fire, the burning won't stop. I won't sweat as much if I stop. You're absolutely right. You'll actually feel better. You'll actually get all the things that were taken from you because you were speaking up, because you're doing things, because you're speaking a different language, and because you're developing a different culture. All that stuff, all that cascading away will begin to stop. And what will happen is all the doubts and all the inadequacies, now all the stuff that was being burned away, now congeals. And if you want to take away even more pain, all you have to do is step backwards. Now all of a sudden you've taken a step backwards and now the heat is not so intense. So you can take another step backwards and it's even less. And this is the difference between clean pain and dirty pain. And now you take a step backwards, you've experienced the dirtiness of it. But you also understand what dirty feels like. You have decided that the gifts that you were supposed to bring into the world, you're now going to die with, and you're all right with that. You're all right with the gifts that you were supposed to bring into the world to change things. You're all right with dying with those gifts, and those gifts dying around you, looking at you as you die at 97, right? And so it's a very potent quote, and it's a quote that certainly applies to the work about race, and very potently speaks to healing in general. And that's the thing that really fascinates me about this juncture in history, this point where we are in history. You know, why do I engage in healing work? Why do I engage in spiritual practice? You know, the kind of American answer is, well, you know, I meditate because it makes me feel better. Or, you know, I meditate for myself, you know. And really what this is revealing is that the work that I have to do on myself, it's not just for myself. It's for others. And This issue of race, it's a perfect example that I'm not going to really be able to take apart my white privilege unless I engage in this powerful self-examination, this powerful work. And so it's really an offering to others. And this is, in fact, always what Buddhism has taught. This goes back to the heart of the Mahayana tradition. You know, in the Mahayana tradition, my meditation is not for me. My meditation is for all sentient beings. This Mahayana idea of bodhicitta, this willingness to save all beings, you know, and it's a wonderful practice, you know, just to ask yourself, you know, why do I do what I do? Is it for myself? Is it for the world? You know, what is the role of my practice? Does my practice belong to me, or do I belong to my practice? And I find the quote powerful also about, you know, if I stop doing the work, you know, and the work is hard and it's very challenging, you know. And so if there's a point that I just say, I give up, I'm not going to do it anymore, then essentially I'm saying I'm going to leave parts of myself on the table. There are gifts that I'm just going to leave on the table and walk away from, you know. And I think it's such a dangerous, we live in a society that denies death, and it's such a dangerous story that we have of, well, I'm not ready to do this now, but I'll do it later. You know, I'll deal with it later, you know, which is also such a tempting story. You know, yeah, sure, I'll do the work, but not right now. 10 years from now, that would be a better time to do the work, you know. The truth of life is, which one of us is guaranteed that we'll be alive by the end of this week, you know? You know, the epidemiological charts say we probably have a pretty good chance to make it to the end of the week, but none of us is guaranteed, you know? And there's a way that the intensity of the work almost requires that urgency, you know? It's not something we're going to necessarily engage with if we think we just have a limited time and I can put it off and I can do it at a more convenient time, you know. There's a kind of urgency, both because of the limited nature of life and because of how much leverage the work I do could possibly have in the lives of others. You know, insofar as I am able to decrease my own white privilege, to that extent I'm walking through the world less in the aspect of wielding a weapon of hate as I move through the world. And so it's a funny time. It's almost like, you know, the question, the incredibly intimate question, am I willing to face my deepest pain, which is such a personal, deeply intimate spiritual question, it's also a political question. Like, it's the nature of this time that it's almost that the spiritual work we do is political, you know? And certainly if I dismantle my white privilege, that would tend to put me one place on the political spectrum. If I say, oh, I'm not going to do this, I'm just going to stick with my, you know, and stick with my, that's going to put me on another place on the political spectrum, you know? And so it's fascinating, the rich nature of the time that we live in. And it's very challenging also, the rich nature of the time that we live in. So I think I'll share the quote. Well, I already shared the quote sheet, so I'll read the other quotes here. From Rilke, the purpose of life is to be defeated by greater and greater things. From Morihei Ueshiba, the founder of Aikido, loyalty and devotion leads to bravery. Bravery leads to the spirit of self-sacrifice. And the spirit of self-sacrifice creates trust in the power of love. Khalil Gibran says, out of suffering have emerged the strongest souls. The most massive characters are seared with scars. Eleanor Roosevelt said, you gain strength, courage, and confidence by every experience in which you really stop to look fear in the face. You are able to say, I live through this horror. I can take the next thing that comes along. Anais Nin says, life shrinks or expands in proportion to one's courage. And it really is true that the courage that one brings or doesn't bring to inner work really shapes the arc of one's entire life. Albert Camus says, those who lack courage will always find a philosophy to justify it. Yeah, the head is never a good ally in any of this. The head will do anything to try and keep you out of it. Maharishi Mahesh Yogi said, the important thing is this, to be able at any moment to sacrifice what we are for what we could become. James Baldwin says, not everything that is faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed until it is faced. Joyce Brothers says, real intimacy is only possible to the degree that we can be honest about what we are doing and feeling. Isabel Allende said, we don't even know how strong we are until we are forced to bring that hidden strength forward. In times of tragedy, of war, of necessity, people do amazing things. The human capacity for survival and renewal is awesome. Bob Marley said quite simply, you never know how strong you are until being strong is your only choice. Elena Vazant says, when you have to do something, life will not allow you to move forward until you do it. Neil Strauss said quite simply, great things never came from comfort zones. Dabash Midra says, don't fear criticism, fear stagnation. Then a couple quotes from Reshma Menakin. And so my compassion, the way I think about compassion, is really a working compassion. It is that I believe that every human being comes on the face of the earth with something, some unique gift that they must bring into the world. You don't get that by looking deep into eyes. You get that by going through some stuff, by having stuff burned away, and by getting your butt back up constantly every day, back to working toward the thing again. That's compassion to me. And then the quote I shared at the beginning, when it comes to white people, it's important to realize that white body supremacy is the water, not the shark.